I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Now I'm going to introduce me.
You must have spotted her by now. She's always there.
Don't I deserve love?
Somebody has to like me best.
Hello, and welcome to the Don't Know Her podcast. I'm Michael.
And I am Scott.
And we are here, as always, to talk about an underappreciated actor of cinema who we want to champion. And today's a very special day, because we're talking about a man. If you don't listen to us often, you may not realise we actually mostly talk about women. Which, you know, we're gay. What else would we be doing?
Talking about men?
Well, yes, and we're talking about a very special man this time. And who would that be, Scott?
That would be the delicious Coleman Domingo.
Exactly. And I don't actually remember now which one of us wanted to do Coleman. I feel like usually it's one of us is pushing.
That's a very good question.
But actually, maybe he just came up and we were like, yeah, obviously we should have done Coleman Domingo ages ago. And also he has such an interesting few months, a few films ahead of him, ahead of us, ahead of everyone, which we'll get into. But he just seems perfect to do now on the podcast.
Yeah, I think it's in our celebration of queer performers on screen. I think he was probably the first name that came up then. So, yay. Well done, Coleman.
Yay, and why do you think you would have put Coleman forward?
Because he is gay.
Which is enough. It's enough criteria for many.
But otherwise, he is really magnetic. In the few films of his I've seen, because going through his filmography again, there is more there than I thought, but I think in terms of the kind of career big hitters we're hopefully going to be covering throughout the episode, in those films, he is so good and seems to be bringing something new and, importantly, exciting every time. He's a very exciting, sometimes potentially dangerous, in one of the films in particular, screen presences, and that danger is just one of the reasons he seems so delightful. Most of the times he's not dangerous. He's just pretty wonderful and charismatic and just pretty scrumptious all around. So he felt just right. What about you? Anything to add?
Not really, apart from, like, it's interesting you say about dangerous. I guess I see that, obviously, in some of his work. But I just find him really comforting as a screen presence, as a stage presence. It's like you're in safe hands because this is a type of actor that seems to be, you know, classically trained, knows all the tools in an actor's box, is having fun playing with those tools. I will stop talking about
his tools.
And he just seems to be just able to commit to whatever the role is, as you say. Like, he's done such a different variation on types of characters and types of masculinity as well. So yeah, I really enjoy watching him, and I'm very excited every time he's going to be in a movie that I'm excited to see.
Yeah, perfect. Here's to the masked gay men. You deserve more love.
Yeah. Well, I do think Coleman Domingo does it.
Oh, he does, that's for sure.
And, you know, he has a few Oscar-y movies coming out. Well, he has two Oscar-y movies coming out. So Rustin, directed by George C. Wolfe, with a screenplay by Dustin Lance Black, who some may remember as winning an Oscar for Milk, the Harvey Milk film. And this film, Rustin, is about Bayard Rustin. And he is someone who is truly underrepresented in American history. And he's someone who helped Martin Luther King and others organize the 63 March on Washington and did so much for, you know, race rights, gay rights, human rights. And so his story deserves to be told. But equally already, because there's been like one article with Coleman talking about Rustin, and it's like he is also riding this wave of, I've paid my dues and now it's my time to be a leading man and win an Oscar, or at least be nominated. Perhaps, like he just seems ripe for that. He also has The Color Purple, the stage musical adaptation of the film and the film of the book, and then going back on screen as a musical film.
There we go. Full circle moment.
But he's playing Mr. And I'm not sure, like I've seen it at the musical on stage. I'm not quite sure Mr. could be good, I guess. It depends how they play it in the movie.
Yes.
It's about the women.
Yeah. And I'm sure he'll bring a lot because he always does. So in Coleman, we have faith. And we Coleman, we trust. I don't know what I'm trying to get to.
Coleman, we have faith. That's irrelevant to what you're talking about, about anything else. And when would you have first known who Coleman Domingo was?
I think it would have been, if Beale Street Could Talk, would have been the first time I really sat up and went, whoa, who's this person? Because I remember seeing the film and being bowled over by him, amongst other performers like Regina King.
But did you say above?
Amongst,
okay, good.
No one is above Regina, ever. But he really did stand out to me there. So I will have seen him in other films. I know I have, based on the filmography that we will go through. But that was the first time where he stood out. We have spoken about that specific performance in a previous episode where we talked about Fathers on Film. But we'll come back around to it anyway because he's just so great. And he really stands out. I mean, that film's so good. So it's kind of like standing out in a film that good is a big achievement. So that is why I'm sure I remember him firstly from that. Mm. But what about you?
I remember seeing him in The Scottsboro Boys, which was a musical by Kander and Ebb, who's more famous for Chicago and Cabaret. My mind went blank. I nearly said Chess. Don't know why.
Holy shit.
That would be a twist. They didn't do Chess. Oh my god, now I'm thinking of Coleman again.
Fair.
Okay, back on track. The Scottsboro Boys, which was a musical at the Young Vic, and a really wonderful, wonderful musical. He's terrific in it. And it was really exciting. I just recently moved to London and was getting, you know, interested in theatre. And this was a really powerful story of, like, racial injustice in, I think, the 1930s, where a group of black men were wrongly accused of raping two white women, and this performed as a minstrel show but with black actors instead. Like, if people don't know, minstrel shows where white people, you know, doing blackface and performing stereotypes of black people, whereas they were taking ownership of that and doing it in a really thought-provoking way.
Great. So that's so exciting.
So yeah, I would have always known him then, in terms of like some of the films we're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, that is. I'm very jealous you have seen that.
And I really would hope he'd come back to theatre. He is one, like, the presence.
I bet. I can only imagine. Do come back, please, Coleman. I mean, I know he still does work in theatre, but you can come back to London if you want. We'll have you.
Yeah, I don't think he has been to London since then?
I don't think so, no.
So in anticipation for this return to the London stage, how about we get our listeners prepped?
Yeah, best that way. Let's do it. Shall I start a wee run through of the career of this wonderful performer?
Yes, please.
I wanted more enthusiasm.
Yeah!
Okay, perfect. That's just what he'd be after. Coleman Domingo was born on November 28th, 1969, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. His father is from Belize, and it's where I was reading it said his family. I assume the rest of his family, or a large part of his family, also from Guatemala. He attended high school and university in Philadelphia, and he majored in journalism at Temple University there. He then moved to San Francisco, which he recounts as the thing that probably has changed him most in his life. It was on Mini Driver's podcast when asked. It's a very strange podcast.
Well, I was going to say that.
It's a very strange.
Something I was
she asks an interesting array of questions. It's a real kind of love-in type.
Yeah, I was going to ask, does he know who Mini Driver is?
I would hope so.
Oh, sorry, but it's not apparent on the episode.
Whether they're pals or not. No, I think she has a lot of respect.
Well, I just love that he was like, I loved you in, you know, Phantom of the Opera when you played that, wildly French part.
It's exactly what he said. Big fan. But yes, he cites San Francisco as like the thing, you know, more than maybe even certain people or whatever in his life that really changed him the most. A pivotal moment, I'm sure, for a gay man to move to San Francisco after a time at university. It was here, I don't know why that was important, but you never know.
I feel like you're very pointed. What have you read that you're not telling us?
No, I promised I'd keep things quiet. No, nothing pointed at all. That was unintentionally emphasized there. Sorry, listeners. In San Francisco, this is where he would start acting, and he would star in a variety of theatre productions. A lot of these were part of Theatre Rhinoceros, which is a gay and lesbian theatre in San Francisco. And it was here that he would start also directing a lot of stage work too. So throughout his career, he's directed a lot of stage productions, a variety of plays, and it was during these kind of earlier formative years in his getting into the world of acting that he kicked off to. His first on-screen role was on the straight-to-video timepiece, which is about a group of gay men coming together at a party to discuss coming out and group sex. So, as intriguing as that sounds, I think it's sadly fairly hard to come by given it was a video release. But perhaps someone will uncover this gem and can tell us just how timepiece is. This came out in 1995. Then from 97 to 2000, he starred in a few episodes of the television series Nash Bridges. In 99, so just kind of moving through a few of the sort of standout moments from the kind of early screen work, he starred in Clint Eastwood's True Crime. The early 2000s through to sort of the mid-2000s, we'd see him mostly starring in theatre works throughout California, many of which being as part of a variety of Shakespeare companies kind of all throughout the state. And in reading the list of Shakespeare work he's done, pretty much all the big hitters are there. So he really did do them all. He must have been part of a touring company who were, a couple of years anyway, working in Shakespeare. His first big break, I would say, came in the rock musical Passing Strange, which started off-Broadway before transferring to Broadway in 2008. He originated the roles of Mr. Franklin Jones, Jupe, and Mr. Venus in these productions. He would then reprise these roles for the Spike Lee-directed film of the production, which premiered in 2009 at Sundance. He would go on to work with Spike Lee again in 2008's Miracle at St. Anna's, and then a few years later in 2012's Red Hook Summer. In 2010, Colman's one-man play, which he wrote based on his own life, premiered off-Broadway. He won a Lucille Lortel Award for Outstanding Solo Show and was also nominated for a Drama Desk and Drama League Award. He would, around this time, also star as Billy Flynn, in the Broadway revival run of Chicago. He wasn't the first, he was, I think, a replacement in there, but that ran and ran and ran and ran for many years. So one of a few, but still very exciting nonetheless. I imagine he made a fabulous Billy Flynn. In 2010 as well, we saw him star, as you mentioned, as Mr. Bones in Candor and Ebb's The Scottsboro Boys. which was directed by Susan Stroman. Was that then the same production that you were
saying? Yeah, that's the same production, yeah, transferred.
So I don't think you'd mentioned, but he was nominated for the Tony Award for Best Featured Actor in a Musical in May 2011 for that production, as well as the Fred Astaire Award for Best Principal Dancer on Broadway, which I thought was interesting. And then when it opened in London in 2013, he was nominated for the Olivier Award for Best Supporting Performance in a Musical. So yeah, I'm sad I didn't see that one, but glad that you did.
Yeah.
In 2012, he appeared as Private Harold Green in Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, a wonderful film indeed.
Which is so special. In researching, I know this is your thing to lead on the research, but I did my own little thing.
Please.
And he opens the film, and he was reflecting on this because he gave Spielberg, I think, the Fabelmans Golden Globe Best Director Award. And he was saying to be able to give this man this award on this platform, a man who gave me like this trust to open up this epic film about American history, just felt so beautiful. So it's just lovely. And I mean, Lincoln is really full of performances, both, you know, from the Coleman Domingos and Lee Paces to the Tommy Lee Jones and Daniel Day-Lewis's to the Sally Field screaming.
In the best way.
In the best possible way. But Coleman's bit is, yeah, what a way to open.
Amazing. Coleman to open everything.
Oh, God.
No comment.
Oh, God.
Oh, my goodness. In 2013, he starred alongside Chadwick Boseman, Harrison Ford and co. in 42, and was in Lee Daniels'
Butler. With Regina Hall. Did we watch 42? So if you want to find out more about 42, it was the baseball film. Regina Hall.
Oh my God, that's right. When I completely glossed over
that's
that.
That's all right. Listeners, If I don't know if it's worth watching 42, but it's definitely worth going back to listen to Regina Hall.
When I read it, I was just like, I haven't seen this film. It's so bad. But it was
good.
We
did watch it, yeah.
Yeah. Shit, sorry, Regina. That's so terrible.
So Regina Hall is clearly the person to talk about.
Oh my God, we've watched too many films now, it seems. They're emptying out of my head. Oh, that is sad. Oh well, 42, yay, go and watch it. Another reason to watch 42, there we are. And that same year was in Lee Daniels' The Butler. They're, you know, probably easier to forget about certain individuals because there are so many people in that cast.
And some of them are hidden behind prosthetics.
Yes, a lot of prosthetics. A very intriguing one, The Butler, one I haven't actually watched since it came out in the cinema. And it's mostly Oprah, which sticks in my head for
just
good
in general.
Reason. Well, that too. But yeah, one I'm sure I will find my way back to one day. Will I? I'm not
well,
sure.
Well, there might be someone else that
there
must
had
a bigger
be,
part in it
my
that
goodness.
We might have to do in the podcast.
Sure, there's so many. There's so many. But there we are. The Butler as well. In 2014, he appears in Ava DuVernay's Selma, portraying activist and Baptist minister Ralph Abernathy. Now, Selma is quite a film.
Well, do you know what? So, you're not a man of many words.
No,
but the words you use are wonderful.
Oh, no, Selma is so great.
It's a film.
It's a film. But it's a good, no, it's such
it
a good film.
Film.
It's
yeah.
such a great film. And everyone is wonderful in it. It's
Oprah.
There's everyone.
That's a movie I definitely recommend. Again, maybe not for Coleman specifically, but in general. It's a really well-made movie, really interesting, powerful performances. Yeah, all around great.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely worth a watch. If you have not seen Selma, please, please do. In 2015, he begins his run in the still-ongoing Walking Dead spin-off Fear of the Walking Dead, which was another notable on-screen breakout moment for him. The same year we see him in Steven Soderbergh's The Nick, and 2016 then brought around some other TV roles. We have Lucifer and Horace and Pete. It would also be this year that we see him in Joseph Graham's Something Beautiful.
Is that the gay one I watched? Yeah, so I did watch this film. Sorry, the reason that we were due to record this before, and I watched this movie in preparation, and that's like that. It is a. I just couldn't tell you the name of it. It is a. It's not a movie I'd recommend. It's kind of like, you know, when we were younger and queer cinema wasn't as fruitful as it is now. Like, their budgets were smaller. It was more taboo, let's say, for established actors to go into those sorts of roles and those sorts of films. It's a flawed film.
Okay.
And it's very, kind of sex positive.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I wouldn't recommend it. I'm just trying to come up with something articulate to say about it. I think it's kind of a cheaply made film. Obviously, people have put time and effort in, so I really hope... I mean, God, that's really offensive to say, but, you know, it's not the most successful of films. Coleman, as ever, is charismatic and so sexy in it. But yeah, maybe I would have been better off watching The Butler again.
Oh, okay. Well, noted for next time. Whenever you're unsure, return to The Butler. Okay, well, God, I feel like there's a lot of films here that we kind of have very little to say about, but maybe you do have something to comment on this one. 2016 would see him in Nate Parker's then after the fact controversial The Birth of a Nation. Now, I intended to go back and watch this one, but because of the aftermath of it, I wasn't drawn to it, and I don't think that's probably unreasonable. But then, reflecting on it, maybe that is short-sighted of me.
Well, I did watch the film. I'd never seen it before. I think the film, like, I guess to give context of what you're talking about, so when it opened at... Was it Sundance? I can't remember the festival that it opened in. And just, like, as the credits were going apart, like, this is what the rumour mill was saying, like, Fox Searchlight Pictures bought the film for, like, just under $20 million, like, the rights to distribute it. You know, the reaction to it was so extreme, like, so emotional. You know, this a revisionist drama about slavery in American history. And, you know, Birth of a Nation is that very famous film for nearly now all the wrong reasons, but like the biggest film ever made, really about the Ku Klux Klan and a really racist film from the 1930s. So to take that name and then tell this story of a hero, a black hero, played by Nate Parker, directed by Nate Parker, written by Nate Parker, at a time where the Oscars also were having the Oscar So White campaign, the most recently, like, big impact. So to have this story being told just was, like, such a combination of different things culturally that it seemed like this movie was going to be the biggest thing to happen. It changed very quickly because it came out within a few months, allegations about Nate Parker raping a woman who then committed suicide, and, you know, that's murky, and you can find all that information online. Like, I'm not the person to be listening to for that sort of thing, but that basically drowned that movie. The movie itself, like, it's the sort of movie, say if none of these allegations came out about Nate Parker, it'd be the sort of movie I think I would have went to see in the cinema. My lisp got very extreme all of a sudden.
No, it sounds lovely.
Cinema. In a cinema. And emotionally had a connection to it. And then on reflection, kind of like, oh, it's clunky. It doesn't work. You know, it's that sort of movie. So Oscar baity. Certainly, I can't imagine it being performing really well with audiences and awards bodies. But yeah, it was kind of drowned before all that happened. And Colman has a really good, solid part in it. And that, you know, that film could have elevated him quicker, I guess, in sort of a Hollywood prestige films, perhaps. I don't know, that's hard to say. But the film itself I wouldn't recommend. And I wish, you know, I wish that film... Like, I don't know, it just seems like such a high and a low. I'm just thinking of, like, Colman Domingo having this exciting movie that's going to be part of a cultural change and then that being taken away in such a toxic, for toxic reasons. And it's complicated because you can include loads of different angles into all this. I don't know. It's just a complicated thing. So, yeah, it is a kind of it's a film with loads of baggage, both historically in what it's depicting, but also contemporary in terms of discussions around, I don't know, equality and in terms of assault and in terms of what we do with toxic people and toxic behaviour. This kind of even before cancel culture, so so it is an interesting one.
It is, and I remember because that Sundance moment was so big, and it, you know, it had certainly the best reception of any film that year, and then because it was the biggest sale out of Sundance ever at that point, you know, there was all of this energy coming out the back of it. And I know Sundance reactions, or any festival reactions, aren't always the best barometer for the quality or longevity of a film, because I think that sales record's been broken many times since. But it really felt like it was going to be a monumental. And then because of the Nate stuff, coupled with probably it just not quite living up to that moment, it all just started to peter out. And I'm sure for many of the people involved, that is a huge shame. And, you know, I'm sure there is something really interesting in it, and it may also be worth me giving it a watch.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the worst film I've ever seen.
Okay.
Do you know, but it's not, even for this podcast, not the worst film I've seen.
Yeah,
like, it's not a bad
okay.
film in that way.
Good, okay. Glowing reviews coming out of this episode across the board.
I feel so terrible. Oh my
God. No, but just you wait. The good stuff's right here, and this is where the career really takes off big time. So, 2017 season become a member of the Academy, and 2018 he joins the Directors Guild of America for having directed a few of the episodes of Fear of the Walking Dead. And this, importantly, and why I bring it up, made him the first actor in the history of that show, which at that point had been running a long time with many, 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 many episodes. It was a network television show. He was the first actor in the show to helm any episodes as a director. So very, very exciting for him, I'm sure. In 2020, he signed a first look deal with AMC. So off the back of this, they're the network which aired all of the Walking Dead shows, meaning that they can have first dibs on anything produced by him. So they obviously see a lot in him and very keen to see what he produces, directs next, a very talented man, so I'm not surprised that they are eager to snap up anything he does have. 2018 now, we'll go back a wee bit. He stars as Joseph Rivers in Barry Jenkins' big screen adaptation of James Baldwin's If Beale Street Could Talk. Now, we could talk about this film over and over, because it is so wonderful. So we're going to talk about it again here so we can celebrate what is truly an all-time great of cinema, as far as I'm concerned. Michael, tell us what If Beale Street Could Talk is about, if you can, because James Baldwin is often quite hard to pin down in such a way.
I guess so, and I will be careful because James Baldwin, I'm the sort of person that describes things through themes or feelings, and I think James Baldwin's writing lends itself to being described that way. But essentially, this is a story of two young lovers in the film played by Kiki Layne and Stephen James, whose family know each other, and Kiki becomes pregnant, and it's the fallout of that. At the same time as Stephen James being put into prison and in a racially motivated arrest. So it's really about that in one layer, but really it's about America, what it is to be black in America, sadly still today, really, because of how things have not changed in any way. Isn't like incarceration the same, or like basically has not changed dramatically since where it's set in the 60s? And it's about being human and what it means to be human and love and relationships and what you do for those you love. So yeah, it's a magical film. I mean, I've talked about this loads. I'm obsessed with James Baldwin. I think the book is incredible. I think this is an incredible adaptation of that book too. I highly recommend reading loads of James Baldwin books. Go Tell It to the Mountain. One Day Will Be Made into a Wonderful Movie.
Mm. Is that your favourite of his books?
No, because I think it would change depending on what I'm thinking about and reflecting on in life. But let's say at the moment that is, I like the structure and whatever. Anyway, sorry. But If Beale Street Could Talk is an amazing book. And yeah, the film is terrific. Everyone is, as you said earlier, is working on in such a level. So like the scene where like, there's two moments, but the scene which involves Coleman that really flies is when the young couple are talking about having a child. And you just have all these, like a lot of characters for a film reacting to this piece of information. And I just think it's the most beautifully constructed dynamic set piece in a film that could be so dull.
Yeah.
But you have Regina King, you have Anjanue Ellis.
She's amazing in that moment too, my gosh.
And Coleman Domingo. And his presence in it is wonderful as this father who is just so caring but aware of the world. Like, he's not naive, but he is also hopeful. And his decisions are based in love and respect of those around him and the women around him.
Tish, you sure you want this baby?
Yes, and Fonny wants it too. It's our baby, and it's not his fault that he's in jail. It's not like he ran away, and we've always been best friends ever since we were little, Daddy. You know that, and we'd be married now if it wasn't for that lady lying.
He knows it. He knows it. Your daddy knows it. He's just worried about you. That's all.
Don't you go thinking I think you're some bad girl or any other foolishness like that. I just asked you because you're so young, that's all.
You do not see these characters that often, these male characters. Yeah, I think the film's really, really, really special. And funny enough, I was thinking about this when I was watching it again, how since the film's come out, like Anjanue Ellis and Brian Tyree Henry, who's amazing.
Oh
in
my
a,
gosh,
in
that
a,
scene
in
as
a,
well.
Yeah, in a monologue where he talks about being arrested wrongfully. It's just the most beautiful piece of writing and performance and directing and everything. But they're two Oscar nominees since If Beale Street Can Talk. So Coleman's the next one, and then we'll have Kiki Layne, Stephen James, we'll have everybody.
That would be so great. Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that scene, because it's special exactly for why you described, because of everything and everyone in the writing. But I just love everything about his character specifically. Them running around to prep him for this moment and, you know, making sure, like, well, what will he think and wondering. And then you wonder what he thinks because he is doing everything. He covers the whole arc very quickly, but is reassuringly on side with that sort of understanding and worldliness that you describe, and just seeing him go through that and traveling that with him and them around, that moment of this, oh gosh, this could be angry, this could be bad, is he gonna be on board? But then you know that they know he'll be fine with it, and I think that's also a beautiful thing and such a good point about not seeing masculinity in that way. It's amazing. This film is incredible. It is absolutely worth everyone seeing. I just think it's such a monumental achievement, and Barry Jenkins is just constantly bowled over on rewatch after rewatch of these films. They don't lose anything. In fact, they get stronger. They get more exciting as time moves on, what he's achieved with his work is unparalleled in many ways. So,
I agree. And actually, just on the point of masculinity, what we haven't talked about is the father of Stephen James does behave in a very stereotypical sort of way, mm-hmm. where he smacks his wife, and has to be removed from the room, which, I don't know, just in terms, like, I'm bringing that up because it's just all of these, because you have a Bible-bashing woman, Anjanou Ellis is sort of playing that part, you have these really progressive characters. That scene alone, to me, is so important to the film, but the whole film has all of this in spades. Yeah, it's wonderful. So, going from the butler to this is a jump.
Mm. Would you have given Colman an Oscar nom for this performance?
Oh, I can't even.
Mahershala Ali wins for Green Book. You have Adam Driver in Black Klansman, Sam Elliott in A Star Is Born, Richard E. Grant in Can You Ever Forgive Me, and Sam Rockwell in Vice.
Oh, fucking
so up. The answer is an easy yes. I would have given him a nomination.
it's so weird, the Oscars.
It really is.
We just talked about this, but I still don't understand Alec Baldwin getting nominated for anything, let alone The Cooler. Like, I don't under like the Oscars
that
have
one's
a problem.
So yeah, that it's they have a real deeply problem. Deeply strange.
So anyway, but that year in particular has some of the best performances and some of the most confusingly awarded or recognized performances. When someone is doing something so gorgeous, but if Beale Street Could Talk was ignored in so many ways, so it was only nominated for adapted screenplay, music, and for Regina King, who did win. Regina Hall, Regina King. Apparently that happens all the time. It's not just me. And Regina Hall will win her Oscar for something. Anyway, so why it wasn't nominated for film, director, actress, supporting actor twice. Actually, I might have nominated Brian Tyree Henry over Colman Domingo, but certainly would have had them close together. Have two. So anyway, I'm just going on. I'd awarded everything.
Great.
And it would have won, maybe. What won that year? Green Book.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's a quite straightforward answer I wasn't expecting. Okay, so let's then trot on to... Still 2018, so not going too far. He stars in Assassination Nation that year. And then in...
Say that five times.
Assassination Nation... Assassination Nation, Assassination Nation, Assassination Nation, Assassination Nation, Assassination Nation.
Amazing.
That's actually quite good, thank you. That aside, 2019, he is then in HBO's Euphoria as Ali, a recovering drug addict. For this, he'd go on to win the Emmy Award for Outstanding Guest Actor in a Drama in 2022, though. I have never watched Euphoria.
What?
You have watched
Euphoria. Oh, my
Lord. Okay, so talk to us.
Well, I just think he's wonderful. Okay. So Euphoria is exciting as a piece of work, the first series in particular, I guess. But I recommend it. But, yeah, his presence with... Is it Rue? I haven't seen it in a while. But Zendaya's character, oh, he's wonderful. Like, so if you think he's good in If Beale Street Could Talk, and that's an interesting... sort of character, this is, it's not the same, but it's a similar tone.
Okay.
And he has these speeches about, you know, what is the world and why people are fucked up and what we're after, and you just want to like lose yourself in his voice. Oh my god, I'm on a one-track mind. You just want, but I mean the beautiful the gorgeous words he's saying.
You have to create a new god, or gods, or whatever you can, but it is imperative that you believe in something, something greater than yourself, all right? And it can't be the ocean, or your favorite song, and it can't be the movement, or the people, or the words. You've got to believe in the poetry, because everything else in your life will fail you, including yourself.
Yeah, it is. It's really touching his performance. Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Oh, I'm glad.
And the film and the TV show has so many different layers to it that I, do like a lot.
Good. Okay, great. Euphoria. Maybe I will get to it one day. It's one of these ones I'm just always... I don't know. I struggle with TV shows often, but maybe I need to give it a chance.
It's hard going.
And maybe that's the reason I'm like, oh no. But also could be incredibly rewarding. Who knows? Maybe I will give it a go. Now let's move on to 2020. I keep doing that like we... Oh no, we were in 2019. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Like we're in the same year.
I'm stuck in time.
Let's move on a week.
2020 sees him star as Cutler in the film adaptation of August Wilson's Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Now, having spoken about Ma Rainey in Bessie a couple of episodes ago, it's... was fun to revisit this version of Ma Rainey again and get so more...
Us, get it off your chest. What do you want to say about Viola Davis?
Oh, that's so mean.
Well, you love her, I'm assuming.
I love Viola Davis so much.
Just as Ma Rainey is what I'm talking about.
I wasn't on the hype train for Violet in Ma Rainey. But maybe just because there's bits about it I find so jarring... The singing so blatantly not coming from her, I find just throws me out of it. And that's quite superficial.
It's she is delayed. It's like Oppenheimer, where the bomb hits, but same. There's a delay. Like, Ma Rainey's voice, and Viola knows this, like she studied, yeah. There's just a bit of a delay.
I see. That's how it works. Okay.
They just didn't get it.
It's an interesting way of framing that. But I think she's good in it. I just wasn't on the hype train. Yeah. That's all I said. I don't think she was bad at all. It just wasn't for me. That wasn't for me her finest moment, but with so many amazing moments, that's not even that much of a slight. But
and she's not helped. I mean, and I think this is a film in general from rewatching it again for this. It's not helped. You know, it's a theatre production written by August Wilson. Beautiful play. I've seen it. It was a beautiful production of it. It was at the National Theatre with Sharon Dee Clarke playing Ma Rainey. Amazing. But it is very theatrical in terms of its staging. And I mean that, I'm saying theatrical, I guess that could be positive. I mean that in a negative way. It feels claustrophobic, but not because that's the intention, just because it's set that way. And I think some of the angles and some of the ways they try to liven it up kind of just add to it, as opposed, like, some of the angles they use on Moraine, when Moraine's on the chair and things like that, or when she's waiting for a Pepsi and the camera's moving. I don't know. There's just, it's not cinematic in a way that maybe would lend itself to helping Viola's performance feel more real. Like, it feels like someone's put on a lot of makeup.
Yeah. Yes. And I think it's
even though I like her way more than you do.
Sure. It's I think it's also a symptom of good marketing as well. The trailer for this film made it look really exciting and theatrical, but in a way you'd want to see on screen, like Moulin Rouge, like there's so much going on. But it was really focusing on a very small moment from the beginning of the film, and then it's all fairly...
Contained.
Yeah. There we go. That's a good way of putting it. And we should say that it is about Ma Rainey going to record an album in a studio and the session band... joining her for that recording, Chadwick Boseman being the trumpeter in that band, Cutler, as played by Colman Domingo, is the...
Don't quiz me on instruments.
I can't remember what instrument he was playing now.
He was
maybe the
he
bass?
Was cleaning it, but I don't know what that is.
Because he always does a one and a two and a you know what to do.
Yeah, but he... I don't know what to do.
So he can't be then putting something to his mouth, because it'd be really hard after
excuse me?
Delivering that opening.
What are you talking about? Uh-oh. Are we still talking about Marini? I don't know what he's playing, but let's assume bass. Maybe we should get a music expert on, or even just someone who can identify music or musical instruments. Anyway, but there's loads of different dynamics. So, like, he's kind of... he'd been around the block a lot. So, like, one interaction I really like is when Chadwick Boseman's arrived. He's young, he has all this ego and ambition, he's got his yellow shoes on, and he has ideas for what they're going to do with Ma Rainey. Then the white producers come downstairs to be like, you're not doing that. And then Coleman is teasing.
The man come in here, call you a boy, tell you to get up off your ass and rehearse it. You ain't had nothing to say except, yes, sir.
I can say yes, sir, to whoever I please. What you got to do with it? I know how to handle white folks. I've been handling them for 32 years. Now you gonna tell me how to do it? Just because I say yes, sir, don't mean I'm spooked up by him. I know what I'm doing. Let me handle it my way.
Well, go on and handle it then.
I just think it's a really interesting dynamic. And then you have like an older man even who has been there even longer. And it's just so like it's just an interesting combination of people. And then, of course, you have Ma Rainey, who understands her worth, but understands the system and how she's going to be treated, which is why, as I mentioned earlier, like she wanted a Pepsi or a Coke or whatever, and they didn't get it for her. And she's treating that as if like, no, you know, you're paying me so little already. I'm going to get my Coke. And then you have, oh my God, what's her name? Paige, who's also Taylor Paige, as a wonderfully flirty presence in both Chadwick Boseman's and Ma Rainey's life. So yeah, it's an interesting thing. And on stage, it's electric, but it's maybe not the best film.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I enjoyed it more on rewatch than I did in the cinema, without that false expectation from the trailer clouding it. So I was definitely glad to watch it again. I think Coleman, and again, no slight on anyone else, for me, he is the MVP, and I think he is the strongest performance in it. He's really living in it in a way I don't get from Chadwick or Viola.
Oh, and I think that's to do maybe from, I mean, Viola's done so much stage work too, but whatever the way Coleman is pitching it, it's perfect combination of, this is a theatre piece, but it's for film.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that it's quiet,
yeah.
It's not, but it's not loud. And I think, and that's the way it's written with Chadwick and with Viola, they're so loud. Like, they're such loud characters. Mm-hmm. And on stage, I think with Chadwick's character, you would get variations maybe, but whatever it is about the film, you don't. And it's the camera work, the way that it, like, moves and, like, the close-ups, it's just like, whoa, we, like, give room for these people to breathe.
Yeah.
And actually, Coleman probably benefits the most from the camera angles. For whatever reason, they don't treat him like, you're the star, so we need to be flashy with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And from the, realising now kind of the far too few films of his I have still seen, he is, however, so different here, but he just is so different every time. He sort of really feels like he's living these characters, and this one feels so different. And when I talked about that danger at the beginning, this is not the film I mean, but there is a moment where he stands up to Chadwick's character, and the way he goes in, you are like, ah, like, oh, you are ferocious. Like, this is, you can be a very powerful, scary presence. Yes. And
handsome.
He's just doing it all. So I was especially glad to rewatch it for him, and glad to have kind of taken away some of the sour taste I felt when I first saw it, feeling like I didn't get what I wanted, but also shame on me for setting false expectations, perhaps.
Yeah, and I think, as you know, is it Chadwick Boseman's last film? I think it's worth watching for lots of reasons. It's also very interesting commentary on social history, and August Wilson is an incredible playwright. People will know better for, in terms of film anyway, Fences, which again is very stagey, but is a better cinematic film, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that is fair and valid. So 2020, a very fruitful year indeed. We would also see him starring as X in Zola. So for this very intriguing film, he was nominated for Gotham and Indie Spirit Awards in the supporting category, also gathering loads and loads of notice with critic circles. He also won the Black Reel Award. So I feel like a lot of attention came to him for this film. However, I think, aside from the ones who did recognise him, it often felt like too late in terms of really giving him some welly and momentum, which could have really taken off, because this is quite a performance within a very unusual film, so maybe Zola is too hard a sell for the likes of the Academy. I suspect that's just the truth of it. And then it makes it more interesting. Do you want to explain the very interesting premise of Zola to us?
Yes, so Zola is based on a Twitter expose, which is brilliant.
It. It's so great.
So Zola, played by Taylor Page, who we just talked about in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, she is a stripper, and she is invited on a... Is it a weekend only? But it's like basically a trip.
Yeah,
a short trip, which is a business trip. It's a good opportunity with Riley Keough. And, you know, they're friends, friends at the time. And things unravel in a spectacularly intense, interesting, darkly funny, dangerous sort of way, and Colman Domingo is a mastermind behind what's going to go, I was going to say go wrong, but what is going to happen. And I don't, you see, this is a film where I think if you're interested in that sort of premise, don't be reading anymore, don't do anything, you know. I think it's very good. I think it's an A24 film, and it's very exciting in terms of the way that it's telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
It also has Nicholas Braun, who people will know better as Greg from Succession.
Yes.
Essentially being Greg again as the boyfriend who's clueless, kind of lovable, I guess, for most people. See, I don't find him lovable.
No, I don't in this. In this, he's less lovable, even more
But he's like
dim-witted.
Yeah, but because he's so dim-witted, I guess I assume that's why people like Greg, because he's so, like, naive, but has a sort of, like, drive or hope or something.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
Regardless of that. But yeah, I really like it. And Colman Domingo is terrific. Like, when, you know, in the car and he's talking to them and you're realizing, like, oh my God, like, what the hell is Zola going to do? It's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. I think this film is tremendously exciting. When I first watched it, when it had fairly newly come out, I thought it was a wild ride. I really enjoyed it. I loved the performances. I especially loved Colman. I thought he was the standout element. But was just kind of then caught up in the frenzy of it watching for the first time. Like, wow, this is quite something. I've not really seen anything like this, or at least in a while. Rewatching it, I think it's pretty brilliant. I think it's also divisive, which adds to its brilliance. I think I'm intrigued to find out how people would fall on it, whether they get a lot out of it or are more uncertain of it or elements of it. I'm interested to hear why and what it is, because there is so much, I think, you could sit on different sides of how the story is told and it comes together in the pace and the performances, some in particular, are quite something to watch. Riley Keough is definitely a polarizing presence, but for me it works really, really well.
I love her.
Yeah.
She's someone I really... And I thought it was maybe the Nepo Baby thing, maybe what's why nobody's ever, like, truly embraced her and celebrated
her. Why? Who could she be related to?
Well, yeah, she's a relation to Elvis Presley, so that would be... That would be something. But I guess she kind of always plays these sorts of characters in a way, but I think she's just such an amazing presence. And yeah, I love Taylor Page. I'd have her in lots more films.
Yeah, and she is an amazing anchor in this film. Fun
How
to
dare
have
you?
That. That's not an unkind thing to say. It's a very kind thing to say. And very exciting to have the Colman Taylor double hander of that year.
Yeah.
So starring together in two very, very different films.
And very different dynamics, like wildly
very
different.
Very different dynamics. I think Zola's brilliant. I say go and watch it and then talk about it. It's got so much going on. And also shout out to T.S. Madison, who has a very small part in it. And it's so fun.
Yeah.
And just watching her give that speech to these strippers and kind of egging them on and getting them going, I find really exciting. But Colman, this is dangerous. He's suave, he's sinister, he's sexy, he's unpredictable. You don't know what's coming. He is at least two different people in one. He is kind of the source of all that is going to unfold, like you said, and the unpredictability of it. He is absolute chaos, but because he contains it in this way, he sells this chaos. I think it's just something to do with the magnetism that Coleman has in spades that not many other people could sell in the way he does, makes this performance an absolute work of genius.
I am not the one. Get your coin, sis. It's been real. I'm
out. Hey! Shut the fucking door, bitch!
Where the fuck you from, nigga?
Nigga, where the fuck you from? Get your ass back in this car before I put your ass back in this car. I picked you up at your house. I know where you live. I know where you work. Next time, you fix up your mouth to talk to me. Remember that. Close my fucking door. Bitch.
Brilliant.
And he should have been Oscar nominated.
He should have. Yeah.
This one is less confusing for me to commit to. I would say yes, 100%.
100%, 100%. I think it's, for me, the most exciting we've had him on screen yet, and this is the one that really makes me thrilled to see. Thirsty for what's next. So keep him coming, Coleman. Anyway, let's have a look at a few of the other bits and pieces he's done since Zola. 2021... brings about the remake of a classic horror. This would be Candyman. So I've also not seen this remake of Candyman.
I was going to say, because it's not a remake, it's a sequel, I think.
Is it really?
I did have, I've seen it. It's continuing the story.
Oh, okay, great.
And I guess revisiting it. I've actually never seen the, is it 92 or whatever?
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
But this version is reflecting on race and America and stories we tell and boogeymen and who they would be and why in a gentrification set. Is it America? Not America. Of course, America. I can't remember what city it's set in. But it's really smart horror movie, which I guess is trying in a way to be a bit like, say, something like Get Out. So like a horror-ish movie with a social consciousness. I would say it's way more, you know, popcorn friendly, sort of, like it's less maybe artistically driven than that, but it's really fun, and Coleman's part is fun. He has like a really great, like, he's someone that they meet and explains a lot, and I think he's like we've mentioned before, like in Your Four or something, when he's just, you know, giving you all this information, he's just so happy to just sit there and listen to him.
Great.
So the film is good, yeah. It would have been one of the first films I saw with my boyfriend, so I also have very fond memories. We also were watching it, shock horror, illegally, and we
on a first
and
date.
It wasn't the first day, I don't think.
Okay.
Because he wouldn't have finished the film.
Oh my god! No,
joking.
I knew you were going there, but I just didn't want you to be.
Sorry, that is candid. That's inappropriate. Inappropriate humor. So we must have been a bit bored of each other. I've no idea. Anyway, regardless of any of that, we stopped it because we were so stupid that they had like turned around everything on the credits on the screen, because the Candyman's in a mirror, so you're in the and we were like, oh, this illegal link's not working.
Oh.
Which shows, guys, you should pay for cinema because it's important, and people have worked on that.
Okay,
I've never done that since.
Good, there we go. I wouldn't believe you would ever. So keep it that way.
And I was expecting a Christina Aguilera-based film on Candyman.
Yeah.
And I still wanted, that's what I want in the future, is a film about Candyman, but the Christina Aguilera version.
Okay, fair enough. Here's hoping that that's what we get. That's the end of this podcast, thank you. Not quite yet. Let's now go to 2023, which is the year in which we're recording. So The only kind of key thing...
I'm like, where am I?
In addition to note here, is he voiced Unicron in Transformers Rise of the Beasts. I mean, he has got a marvellous voice,
is
so
that a,
congratulations.
A porn version of Transformers?
I believe so. It also is straight to video, like his first film.
Straight to video?
Mm-hmm.
You're joking.
I am joking.
Like, Transformers really gone down that far. I know sequels aren't making money nowadays, but that's wild.
Yeah. Anyway, and then we have all of the things to look forward to, which we've already mentioned. We've got Rustin, we've got The Color Purple, and hopefully all the many things he's going to continue to delight and thrill us with. The only other thing from his career, which I didn't really slot in, which was fun to mention, is in an interview... he said he also spent some time as an aerial performer in a travelling circus. So he's truly done it all.
What more can we want from this man?
No, I don't know what we could possibly want. But if we were to suggest something, do you have anything in mind that you would love from Mr. Domingo?
Also, before I do that, he has a movie called Sing Sing that is going to premiere at Toronto as well this year. Or Toronto, is that the festival that has to come up?
Yeah, that's coming up.
Yeah, so a film called Sing Sing, which I'm hoping he gets to sing in. So there'll be like two musicals. Because Mr. does have some singing in The Color Purple. It's mostly the women that sing. What do I want to see Coleman do? I found this much harder because I kind of want him to do everything.
Yeah.
But I basically would love him to make whatever film he wants. Like, I would love to see him direct. He clearly has a huge, like, lives and breathes American history in a way that I would love to hear and see his thoughts on that. And if he wants to be in it too, all the better for it. So that's more vague than I ever usually am with people, but I just feel like I have no right to suggest. I mean, I'd love to see him in a musical. I'd like, for instance, how wonderful would it be if he did Guys and Dolls and he was Skye Masterson or something.
Yeah.
Do you know, and we just had a really fun time with him.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. I think I'm coming down similarly in that I do want everything. I want more Barry Jenkins. I would like to see more... who else would I like to see more from? More from everyone and everything that has been good and delightful. But also, I would quite like to see him in... and I don't think I've ever really used this name before, but I'd love to see him in a Quentin Tarantino film as a villain type. Or a kind of... if Scorsese was to do another kind of Americana type piece, I'd love to see him in a Scorsese film. But the other thing that just jumped to my mind because... of Zola and kind of what's going on there, but also because specifically he can do this really suave thing whilst being terrifying, is I would like to see him as like a Bond villain. If he was to get a big sort of moment like that, I think he would be magnetic to watch as a Bond villain. So I'd also be into that. So yeah, but truly anything, because I've not seen enough, because... there is more out there I could watch, but also I want so much more and I look forward to all the things that are coming. And I'm confident he's going to get traction for these things coming up and we are going to see way more of him and probably on award stages included. So very exciting times for Mr. Domingo and was thrilled to have talked about a fabulous performer such as he.
Yeah, so last year we did an episode on Brendan Fraser. He went and won an Oscar.
Yeah.
So... let's do it. Let's light all of our candles. Let's all hold hands and make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also brought around Michelle Yeoh's last year too, so we're pretty good at this. So I think, Coleman, you're welcome in advance.
Yeah, exactly. God, maybe it's something we've always... and Angela Bassett? We did an episode on her and now she's getting an honorary Oscar.
Oh, of course. I was like, she didn't win, remember?
My God. You're in denial. Yeah, no, that would happen. I have done that sometimes. Sometimes I wake up in the morning like, I'm so glad Glenn Close has an Oscar.
Uh-oh.
No Oscar. I'm only joking. I know well. We live and breathe that as gay men.
Yes, of
course. Think we'd all lose some superpower if Glenn Close suddenly won a competitive Oscar.
Yeah, I know. I think the world, that's the point at which it collapses.
So, on that note, thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you.
And thank you so much, Mitch.
Mitch, thank you so much, Mitch.
Mitch, that's Rock Hudson's character's name. Oh, my God, have we got a remake of All That Heaven Allows, like a straightforward remake with Cumin Domingo?
Okay,
so he can be Mitch. I might be confusing the name. Some film buffs listening will be like, this man has confused everything.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to mention Rock Hudson and that and All of That Heaven Allows. Beautiful movie with handsome people doing beautiful things in a melodrama. So where can people find us if they'd like to tell us where they'd like to see Cumin Domingo go?
Well, besides being at Cumin's pool party this weekend.
all the gays are there.
You can also find us on Twitter. Is that?
X. I mean,
X? The point at which you're listening to this. I don't know. Maybe Threads. Who knows? You'll find us somewhere in there. Probably at don'tknowher_pod. Or you can email us at don'tknowherpod@gmail.com.
Yeah, Instagram's probably the best place.
Yeah, the most Instagram. Secure. We're there.
Yeah, and please do rate, review us, pass us on to anyone you think would enjoy spending an hour or so with us chatting about wonderful people doing mostly wonderful things, in this case. Yeah, and thank you again, Scott, and thank you again, listeners. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Ditto that. Thank you. Goodbye. We'll be right back.